it's hard to be humble when you're perfect in every way. I can't wait to look in the mirror, 'cause I get better looking each day. To know me is to love me. Now I must be a heck of a man. Oh Lord, it's hard to be humble, but I'm doing the best that I can. Now I used to have a girlfriend, but I guess she just couldn't compete with all of you love-starved women keep clamoring at my feet. Well, I probably could find me another, but I guess they're all in awe of me. Who cares? I never get lonesome, 'cause I treasure my own company. Oh, Lord, it's hard to be humble, perfect in every way. I can't wait to look in the mirror, 'cause I get better looking each day. To know me is to love me. Well, I must be one heck of a man. Oh, Lord, it's hard to be humble, but I'm doing the best that I can. I'm not done yet. You might say that I'm a loner, an outlaw, tough and proud. Lots of friends if I wanted, then I wouldn't stand out from the crowd. Now some folks say that I'm egotistical. Heck, I don't even know what that means. I guess it has something to do with the fact I appreciate me being me. Oh, help me out here. Oh, Lord, it's hard to be humble when you're perfect in every way. Now I can't wait to look in the mirror, 'cause I get better looking each day. To know me is to love me. Well, I must be one heck of a man. Oh, Lord, it's hard to be humble, but I'm doing the best that I can. Yes, I'm doing the best that I can. Come on, come on, come on. Come on.
The series of messages that I'm offering here are meant to deepen into that heart and spirit of our church a little bit more. Our mission is living love and uplifting lives, and we've been looking at that mission through some different portals and viewpoints. Finding love in loss, finding love in community, and today we're going to be talking about finding love in yourself. And the reason I'm grateful for the song is because we need to add lightness and levity to it. And I hope that in the message here today, you will also come to appreciate how much courage, how much tenderness, and how much fierceness is involved with loving yourself. Loving yourself isn't always rainbows and butterflies and unicorns and fun and frivolity, as it certainly is. But part of the reality and the honesty of the human spirit is that sometimes the experience of loving ourselves is difficult. And I hope that after today, you'll have a greater appreciation of that and a greater confidence in how you can love yourself even when you don't feel like it, or you feel like you're standing in a current and all of life is coming against you. So I really hope that that you'll experience that today. And then as you do that, you'll be able to just be refreshed and renewed in who you are and how you fit in this community. Everybody belongs. Everybody has something to do. And I know that many of you are involved here and involved in great ways. And I hope that maybe if there are some of you that are newer to this community or maybe feeling a little bit like an outlier, like I don't know this unity stuff, and I don't get it, and I don't get who these people are, but I want to, you know, I want to come here. I hope that after these next few weeks that you might gain a greater sense of clarity of, hey, here's what I can do. Here's how I want to engage. Here's how I want to connect and be a part of this community. The beautiful thing is it's going to look different for everybody. One of the things that unity is not is believing that everyone and everything is the same. Unity means everything and everyone is welcome just as they are. But this isn't like a one-size-fits-all, everyone and everybody is the same. Everything is different. Everybody is different. Every faith and religion and spirituality is different. And we welcome and we celebrate that. We don't try to form fit and, you know, get everybody into a, you know, common set of ways of believing and ways of thinking or anything like that. No, we love the diversity and we welcome the diversity that's here. And the programs and even the messages that I bring are simply offerings or invitations for you to accept or not. I've said before, for you as you listen, you know, chew the meat and spit out the bones. Take what works and take what doesn't. So that's where we are here. And I left my clicker down here. That's... Excuse me. Yeah, so there's our intention for these messages, connecting to our deepest longings and passions, and then may we better know and define our culture and community. Now, as we talk about finding love in ourself, I want to begin with something that Jesus was asked. And Jesus was asked at one point, "Teacher, what is the greatest commandment?" In the religious system that he was a part of, there were many commandments, volumes that had been written. And he was asked, you know, what's the greatest? And he said simply that love God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. And the second one is, does anybody know it? Love your neighbor as yourself. Yeah. Now, I come from an evangelical tradition, so we talked a lot about loving our neighbor and all that. But this part about loving yourself was kind of... We didn't talk about it all that much, because in many traditional Christian communities, it is taught and believed that people are fundamentally bad and need to be helped and rescued by God. But if we believe, and I believe, and I offer that, no, we are fundamentally good. We are fundamentally image bearers and bringers of the love and the light of God. There's kind of an assumptive quality to that commandment, love your neighbor as yourself. So there's almost like you already love yourself, so therefore love your neighbor as you're loving yourself. And I got to confess, it was a head scratcher for me for many years. I don't get it, you know, because let's face it, there's some days I don't love myself, or at least I don't think I love myself. You know, so what can this possibly mean? Well, there's a fluidity and there's a dynamism to it. After Jesus said that commandment, someone asked him, "Okay, Lord, who is my neighbor?" And does anybody know how Jesus responded to that neighbor? He told a story, the parable of the Good Samaritan. Exactly. Yeah, and it's a story of someone who is lying on the side of the road, and two people walk by them, and a third person comes up and offers them help. And Jesus asks this person, you know, who was the neighbor? You know, the one who showed this man mercy. Go and do likewise. And so, what we've done in the West, in Western religions, we've turned that into the parable of the Good Samaritan. And we think about being a Good Samaritan as, yes, someone who does good things and helping people who need help. And that's certainly a central theme in the story. But it's not the whole story. Because there's nuances in the story that are meant to take us inside to this idea of loving your neighbor as yourself. And the first little insight that often gets missed is this. In Jesus' day, the Samaritans were one of the most outcast, misfit peoples in their day, okay? They weren't a part of the original community. They were not liked. They didn't fit in. They didn't belong. So for an original hearer to hear Jesus say, hey, one of these people from the outside that's not a part of our church community, that doesn't fit in or whatever, is the neighbor, that really rankled their feathers. Like, what? Them? Do you see the political sign they have in their yard? That person was the neighbor? Do you see the kind of football team they root for? Yeah, Jesus says, that guy. And so the idea here is that it's not just in the offering, it's not just in the offering and the giving of help to someone, but it's also in the process of receiving love. Receiving love from some of those people that you might least expect to receive it. Have you ever had an experience of someone that maybe you were having a relational struggle with or whatever, and they do something nice for you? That's happened to me, and it just stops me dead in my tracks. You know, it sort of has this way of shifting my attitudes and my perspective on them. Okay, so that's the sting of that story, is that there's more to being a good Samaritan than just doing good things for other people, as good and fitting as necessary it is. It's about crossing racial and cultural and political and gender divisions and connecting with it. But there's also an interior quality to it as well. And one of the things that in unity and New Thought communities is we take the teachings of Jesus both for their face value and their external value, but then we also look at the allegorical, spiritual, internal value as well. So as much as this story of the Good Samaritan is about loving those people and connecting with those people that are unknown and unliked outside of yourself, it can also be said that the same is true for those parts of ourselves that maybe we don't like or don't know very well. And that's really where the process of loving yourself, where the rubber meets the road. I think all of us, if we're honest, have parts of ourselves, things about ourselves that maybe we don't either know very well or we don't like very well. And part of the human experience is about getting to know those parts and loving those parts and showing those parts of ourselves love and compassion. Let me illustrate it to you visually. Does anybody know what tomorrow is, by the way? Totally shifting gears here a little bit. Monday, yes, and the first day of what? First day of fall, yeah. Yeah, the first day of fall. So it's the what? The equinox, yes. It's the autumnal equinox. And I'm told, if ChatGPT is right, it happens at 7:19 tomorrow morning. So at 7:19 tomorrow morning, our days will get shorter and our nights will get longer. Yeah, and it's really interesting just to examine, your relationship with that. But one thing I'd like to remind us of, this only happens in the Northern Hemisphere. What happens to our neighbors in the Southern Hemisphere of the Earth? The days get longer. Yeah, so it's real easy. I get around, doom and gloom, the world is getting dark and cold and we're in it. Well, that's true, but remember, that's only true for half of us. For the other half of us, it's the beginning of longer days and shorter nights. And so I love the beauty and the symmetry and the energy of that, and the reminder that, yes, as we're mindful of our present situation around us, let's also keep our vision expanded and realize that, hey, though it may appear like it's getting darker here, just to our neighbors to the south, the opposite is happening. The same is true on the inside. Let me show it to you this way. Part of what Jesus and many other spiritual traditions talk about is that as human beings, we have a divine and a human nature to ourselves. And in many traditions, they divide them, and they say that the human is bad and evil and the divine is good, and so that these two sides are at war with each other. One of the things that Jesus offered, and other spiritual traditions do as well, is that no, healing and growing and maturing as a person is about the integration of these two natures. And in some of the early Christian literature, it was referred to, the Greek word is anthropos, which means the perfect human. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus said, be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect. And many people think, I can never be like God. And that word perfect doesn't mean perfect as we think about it today. The way of thinking about perfect is about being whole, about being complete. But the important thing to remember that is that this process of becoming whole, this process of becoming complete, never ends. And that's what I love about imagery. In this imagery here, the idea is these are two circles of equal radius, and when they come together, it forms this shape in the middle. Do you know what that shape is called? Does anybody know what that shape is called? In sacred geometry, or what? An ellipse, a football. I like it, yes. A football, I love it. Yeah. So I heard some chatter about this. So just my little oblique reference to the Apple Cup yesterday. You know, purple and gold. Purple and gold are the colors of the University of Washington. The University of Washington is in Seattle. The team that they played was Washington State University. It's in Pullman. Their colors are crimson and gray. So that's kind of some of the where all that goes. And yesterday, the Huskies won the Apple Cup. So it was 59-24. So, and the experience of listening to that story, driving over here, I've never been to Pullman. I've never been to Martin Stadium. I really don't have any desire to go there. But just the experience of doing that was a spiritual one. But I'm getting off track. Back to this, okay? This could be an ellipse. It could be a football. The sacred geometrical name for this is called the Vesica Pisces. Have you ever heard that term? I hadn't either. And you know what it means? The Vesica Pisces is simply Latin for the belly of a fish. Now, does that remind you of a Bible story, those of you that grew up in Christian Sunday school? What story? The story of Jonah. Yeah. Yeah. So how interesting. You know, now the story of Jonah, again, is just a story. I know I'm getting off track here, but bear with me. I heard so many messages about how it's scientifically possible for a man to survive in the belly of the fish of a whale. Now, of course, maybe that happened. I'm not here to argue that or diminish that, but I think it misses the point. The point is that this idea of the bladder of the fish or the belly of a fish is this experience of human growth and human transformation. And maybe you might be here, or you've been here before, or a time will come, trust me, it's coming, where you feel like you're literally inside the belly of a fish. Okay? The encouragement is to hold on, to persevere, because something in there very, very special is happening. And so to love yourself is to know yourself and is to appreciate the various parts of yourselves and treat them with love and compassion, because the invitation here and the offering is that the greater love and compassion we can offer ourselves manifests as greater love and compassion to others. And if you find it difficult, I would offer you this. Think of maybe someone that is difficult for you to love or know or whatever, and be open to the experience of either offering them an expression of love or being offered an expression of love by them. That tension, that difficulty, that hardship is like the crucible by which we get to know and love ourselves better. So in the time that remains, I just would like to offer you three things. I realize this is kind of deep and maybe going way over your head, okay? I just would like to offer you three principles that can help you navigate finding love in yourself. And the first one, and you've heard me allude to these before, so it's worth saying once, it's worth saying again. The first thing is this. Remember that love is not something you have. Love is something you are. Dallas Willard put it this way. Love is not opposed to effort, it's opposed to earning. To love requires effort, yes, but it's this sense of earning and this sense of deserving that Jesus and other spiritual teachers taught that, no, there's more to it than that. One of my favorite stories is Les Miserables. Well, it's a musical, I guess. Any of you seen Les Miserables? Yeah. And it's the story of a main character, Jean Valjean, who's in prison. He breaks out of prison and in the course of his life transforms into a person who offers love and grace to his community. I'm not going to take the time to go into the detail of it, but there's a really stunning scene where shortly after Jean Valjean breaks out of prison, he stops off into the home of Bishop Muriel and steals a bunch of his china and silverware. He gets caught, he gets brought back to the bishop, and the bishop not only tells him that those things that he took were a gift, but gives him even more. Gives him even more stuff. And that act of mercy, that act of grace that Jean Valjean received is played out as the story goes on. The antagonist in the story is a man named Javert. Javert is the man of justice and law who seeks to bring justice to the situation. And the tragedy of Javert's character is he can never integrate justice and mercy. And his drive for justice, was to his own demise. But this story here, again, is a reminder that sometimes love, in its expressing, can appear scandalous. It can appear outrageous. It can appear illogical and irrational. Jesus told another story to illustrate it, of a landowner who hired workers. Some of the workers started at 9 a.m., some started at noon, some started at 3, some started at 5. When they came to the end of the day to get their paychecks, you know what happened? They all got paid the same. Yeah. Again, Jesus wasn't just coming to set up an economic system as much as he was to illustrate in this experience of love and life, it's not about earning, it's not about attaining, it's about being and receiving and trusting. Secondly, finding love in yourself. Remember this, love is not manipulated or controlled or possessed. And the invitation here is to notice when the mind wants to do it and not pathologize it or make it wrong, but notice in the experience of love how much our natural brain wants to somehow manipulate it, control it, or possess it. My father recently passed away, and he passed away from complications for an abdominal surgery that he had to have. The reason he had to have abdominal surgery is because he developed bleeding from a change in blood thinner medication that he was taking. The blood thinner medication was for a medical procedure that his doctor who assigned the medical procedure later on realized he didn't need. So as I was with my family all this week, we were dealing with, you know, where's the justice and where's the accountability in this? Because had my dad not been giving himself these injections for a new blood thinner medicine, he may just be here today. And so as a family, we're navigating what does it look like and what does it mean to bring accountability and justice and fairness to a situation like this. Many others of you know stories like this and have stories like this. And the reason I share that story with you is to affirm that sometimes when we experience love and when we experience loss and when we experience breakup and heartache, yes, there's going to be a need to, there's going to be a reaction to it. And so the idea here is to honor that and recognize in the final analysis of things, love protects, love sustains us in everything that we're going on. Think of it this way. Are any of you familiar with Aikido? Aikido is a Japanese martial art that is based on harmony, fluid, and nonviolent communication. So the idea, nonviolent conflict resolution. So in most martial arts, the idea is to meet force with force. In Aikido, the idea is to move toward your opponent, know your opponent, blend with that opponent, and redirect it. And so if we think about this, again, in our experience of love, and I'm thinking about this on the inside, these are especially maybe for these parts of you, things you've said or things you've done that you regret, you feel sorrow, you feel shame, you know, whatever from it. Instead of pathologizing it, instead of burying it or denying it, can you invite it, and with the help of community and you know, good counselor, therapist, coach, or whatever, learn to love and to learn from that. The love that you can experience is incredible. James Finley puts it this way: love, in its expression, protects us from nothing, but sustains us in everything. And when love touches suffering, the suffering is turned into mercy. That's the beautiful, beautiful idea. So Armand Bitton put it this way: love rather is an invitation to presence. It's an invitation to presence. Thirdly, Consider forgiveness as a return to innocence. Consider forgiveness as a return to innocence. When we think about the process of forgiveness with those outside of us, there's usually some element of apology, remorse, regret, and making amends and making things right. And that's all part of the process. The invitation here is to apply that same process to yourself, but to maybe be open to taking it one step further. And to think of forgiveness as including apologies, remorse, and forgiveness and all of that, but as a coming back to innocence. And a helpful image to think of is children. Whether you have biological children or not, I think in some way, shape, or form, all of us have some kind of interaction with children. And Jesus talked about entering God's kingdom or entering God's realm as what? Children. He was going about his ministry one day, and kids were coming up and raising all kinds of chaos and whatever, and the disciples were saying, "Teacher, teacher, stop this chaos. Put these children back in their room. They're misbehaving." And remember, Jesus just said, "Hey, let the little children come unto me, because the kingdom belongs to such as these." And this is where I think laughter and play can come in. I had the joy last week of being with my nephews and my nieces, and most of them are between the ages of 3 and 6. And oh, it's just so much fun, because Uncle James gets to just sugar him up and play him up and then give him back to mom and dad. It's like, yes, I love that, you know? I also had a chance to see my 6-year-old, or my 15-month-old grandson, you know, same thing, so cute and so sweet. But the idea here is this: kids enter the world, all of us do, with this sense of innocence, don't we? There's a playfulness and there's a curiosity and all of that comes along with it. And when we think about loving ourselves, maybe it's the children that can show us a little bit of what that's like. I've, in raising 3 kids myself and having 3 grandchildren now, my favorite all-time book on parenting is one called How Children Raise Their Parents by Dan Allender. I read it 20 years ago. It's still on my bookshelf, and it's like my holy grail of coming back for it, because I spend so much of our time, again, fittingly and properly so, raising and training our children. Yes, they need that. But don't lose the inner lessons that kids can teach us about innocence. And I think that's very, very powerful. The process of doing it, though, again, isn't always easy. I was listening to a blog, or not listening to, reading a blog the other day, and this person, I think his name was Stoic Guy or something like that, said, "Love is not a feeling, it's an action." And there were a lot of, you know, yeah. And the context of the quote was that, you know, hey, love is about showing up even when the feelings aren't there. And there's a lot of truth to that. And I almost wrote in the chat, but I don't, because I don't engage in social media debate that way. You know, what if love was both an action and a feeling? And loving yourself is the is having the awareness and the consciousness to act and behave with or without the feeling, or in spite of the feeling. And again, the integration of those two is the growth of loving yourself. So I hope that's helpful to you, and I hope that gives you, an idea and an image in your mind that loving ourselves is a lifelong process, a lifelong journey. If you feel like you aren't there yet, don't lose heart, because we're all in the same boat. We're always learning, always growing, always maturing, always becoming more whole and complete. So what I'm going to do right now is I think we're going to go into a little time of meditation, and then we'll bring our time here to a close.
So as we prepare for meditation, let's just relax into ourselves, and if you'd join me in singing In the Stillness. stillness of this moment, there is peace, there is peace. And I rest and trust and breathe and know that in the stillness of this moment there is peace. In the stillness of this moment there is love, there is love. In the stillness of this moment there is love, there is love. And I rest and trust and breathe and know that in the stillness of this moment there is love. In the stillness of this moment I am love, I am love. In the stillness of this moment I am love, I am love. And I rest and trust and breathe and know that in the stillness of this moment, I am love.
Just allowing yourself to remain in this moment, maybe letting your eyes close, breathing and settling. Awareness of the love that is here among us and the love that is inside of you. Can you open and can you soften and can you receive? Maybe just allowing these words from Mary Oliver to wash over you. She writes, you do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles in the desert repenting. You only have to let the soft body of your heart love what it loves. Tell me about your despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and the deep trees, the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese, high in the clean blue air, are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you, like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over announcing your place in the family of things.
Trust and breathe. that in the stillness of this moment there is peace. In the stillness of this moment there is love, there is love. In the stillness of this moment there is love, there is love. And I rest and trust and breathe and know that in the stillness of this moment